Grace and peace, everyone. I am Pastor Dave here with Pastor Steve, and welcome to Faith Talk, a worship companion podcast from the West Toledo Parish here in Toledo, Ohio. During our episode today, we will be continuing our deeper look at our current sermon series, Those Corinthians.
And today we have a very familiar passage, probably to most people.
Oh, yeah.
1 Corinthians 13, the love passage, one of the great love passages of all literature.
Indeedly do. I tell you, it's funny because I'm preparing in August. A friend of mine that I went to high school with, she and I were in theater together. I played Danny Zuko in Grease. She played Sandy.
Oh, you know. So you've kissed this girl.
I have, yeah. And I remember, too, and she'll probably never listen to this, but I'll share this quick story. She was dating, his name was Zebulun, and he was always on stage crew. Mm-hmm. And I remember the one scene where we're at the drive-in, and Danny's trying to make the move on Sandy, you know, in the drive-in. I'm looking over. He positioned himself in such a way backstage that he was staring at me, and I could see the whites of his eyes as I was leaning in to put my moves on her. She's getting married, and she reached out to me and said, you know what, I'd be willing to do her wedding. And I said, absolutely. It's later in this year in August, but I met with her and her fiance, and she and him, they were very like, look, we're traditionalists. Faith is part of this, but the future husband was like, I have to be honest with you. We're not doing 1 Corinthians 13. I am so sick and tired of hearing that every wedding I've ever gone to.
Well, and there's a certain age where you go to a lot of weddings,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. And they're all my age, so we're geriatric millennials.
Right.
And so they've been
to a lot of weddings.
Yeah, and it's not their first wedding for either of them.
Oh,
so
okay.
He's just like, I don't want that.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, I hear you. I hear it. Because, again, as you had said, this is like one of the
go-to passage.
Yeah, I think on the list of like suggested Bible verses for weddings, this is like number one.
Right.
It's like huge.
I very few weddings where I haven't, I don't know if there's any wedding where I haven't done it. I don't know.
I think we even did it at my wedding.
Yeah, we did. I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
So it's a big one. Yeah.
But it lays out a high bar.
It really does. It really does. And it's whenever I remember when you and I were teaching catechism a couple years ago, I think we asked the kids, you know, is it easy to be a Christian? And they're like, oh, yeah. And I immediately went, really? Because my mind went to this verse.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, I don't think it is. Because the kind of love that we're called to in Christian community,
right,
that's a difficult love.
And that's what's interesting, because I think since we do tie this so much to weddings, that we think of this passage when we think about romantic love,
mm-hmm,
but that's really not the kind of love, because it's talking about agape love.
Yeah, that's not what Paul's not talking about, that romantic
He's
stuff
not,
here.
So in Greek, there's eros, and then there's agape. Mm-hmm. Actually, there's more than that.
And
just
filio,
those two. Yeah, there's
like Philadelphia for brotherhood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's different kinds of love in Greek, whereas in English, it all gets condensed down to one word.
Yeah.
But the kind of love we're talking about here is that self-giving for the sake of another kind of love.
Yeah.
So this is not just this high bar is not just restricted to a marital relationship or mm-hmm even a home.
No.
It's supposed to be how Christians address all people.
This literally sets an ethical standard for us.
Yeah.
You know, that's what this does. This sets that, as you said, this sets that bar.
Yeah. And what Paul's really addressing here is the conflict that's in this Corinthian community.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and people have probably heard, if they've listened to the podcast, my sermon's the one that's on there this week. But this passage right prior to it, mm-hmm, is where, you know, they're talking about their differences.
Yeah.
You know, and they're highlighting the differences, and it seems like there's conflict over the differences. And Paul is like, hey, we're all created differently, and we are all moved by the Spirit differently.
Mm-hmm.
But we are all united like the very, and then this is where he has that great body image, It's like various parts of your body.
Yeah.
They have different functions, but you have a whole. And if one part is hurting, it hurts the whole body.
Yes.
You know, so I think we probably do a disservice to ourselves sometimes when we're not talking about this in the context of the previous chapter.
Yeah, I brought that up over here at the All Saints side because it's, you know, I was when I began my first pass through, you know, because I go through a couple revisions throughout the week when it comes to the sermons. My immediate guttural response to this was to highlight kind of those differences that I experienced growing up, having my family split when it came to spiritual disciplines, right? Because my father left the Lutheran church and went Pentecostal and non-denominational.
Yeah.
So I spent a lot of my formative years learning about all the other types of like gifts of the Spirit that we don't really focus that much on in the Lutheran church.
Right.
And
I mean, we kind of do because usually people in the Lutheran church have done those spiritual gifting inventories.
Yeah. But I mean, I guess because, you know, I've done the inventories too, and those go much deeper than what you get preached to on a Sunday.
Yeah.
You know, so I was, you know, in the first. You know, Paul gives us examples in here about, you know, the gift of speaking in tongues, the gifts of prophecy, all that stuff. And it's, you know, you hear a lot of that in some of the more fundamentalist, non-denominational congregations and in worship settings. And, you know, I wanted to go down that route initially, but then I was doing some more commentaries and I listened to a couple more podcasts and I was like, you know, I don't think this is... For in our context today, it's not. This is not here to poo-poo the difference between different Christian traditions, right? It's to highlight how all of that is important. The greatest of the spiritual gifts, so that we get our faith, hope, and love, and the greatest of those is love.
Yeah.
And so, what is that? What is that thread that kind of ties all these spiritual gifts in our community together? It's that love piece, and oftentimes we put that aside for the flashier, cooler, more showy stuff.
Yeah. Or it's about our ambitions, too.
Yeah.
I mean, because I talked about that in my sermon, because when he starts talking about, prophecy, my ambitions are these, to understand all mysteries and all knowledge and to have all faith. I mean, that's... You know, as a pastor and a preacher, those are kind of my ambitions.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I mean, I think about love, but I mean, most of the time when we're looking at commentaries and studying the scriptures, it is about understanding and building knowledge. And then we think of the Bible as being about faith formation.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of my brain space gets caught exactly where Paul starts, right? It's like, oh, yeah, that's it. He says, you can have all that, but if you have love, dude, you're nothing.
Yeah, without love, it's empty. It really is. Because, you know, it's what I tried to get people to realize, you know, what I preached over here. It's like, it doesn't, you know, it... If we're not, love is the vehicle by which we live what we preach. And if we're not doing that, if we're not stepping out into what we profess to be true, then nobody's going to want a part of that.
Yeah.
Nobody wants it. I mean, I'm looking at my generation today, right? The millennials, whether you're a younger one or an older one, and all the, you know, Gen Zers and everything that follow, it's like they don't want a piece of a community that's not loving, that's not outreaching, that's not caring, that's not forgiving. You know, they get enough of that in the world.
Yeah, and the hard part is there's enough manipulation going on in the world that you can be doing and saying all the right things, but people are still questioning because they don't start from a place of trust.
No.
Because the church has been undermined by, well, bad behavior, but also the way that we overemphasize the negative in our newscasting and our even the way that we talk about each other often overemphasizes the negative over and above
It does.
Contributions that people make or the positive aspects of people, we're much more likely to talk about those things that are negative or undermine somebody's station in the community. And so that's the hard part about all this, right? And Paul's talking to something that's really important, but the hard part is, yeah, you can have all the right answers and everything, and you can be doing it from a genuine place, but people are suspect as to whether you're really genuine or not.
You're sus. That's the current phrase, right? Yeah. You're sus.
It's like, I would compare it to our German Shepherd, because I've since found out that all German Shepherds are like this. They're a little suspect of all new people and all new dogs.
Everyone is sus.
Yeah, you know, and the best you can do with a German Shepherd is just give them the chill at first and then wait, because their first reaction is to go, hey, hey, hey. They're not like a Labrador Retriever. A Labrador Retriever assumes everybody's their buddy.
I know, right?
Yeah.
There's a hilarious influencer that I follow on Instagram and TikTok. Well, we'll see how long he's on TikTok, because I guess the government's shutting TikTok down. But he does all of these dog videos on, like, if people were this breed of dog, how would they behave? And let me tell you, it is hilarious. But generally speaking, every time he does a retriever, it is exactly that.
Right.
Hey, you're my friend. Let's go do something, you know? Yeah. Oh my gosh, a ball. Is that my ball? You know, it's hilarious. But yeah, I would agree with you there. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And especially these later generations are very much like that. I think it has a lot to do with, the term's not popular anymore, but broken homes.
Oh yeah.
Where they thought one thing about their parents and their framework of trust has been broken.
Yeah.
Yeah. It gets hard.
Well, and we were even like, cause again, over here at the All Saints campus. So any of our listeners, you are always welcome. You know, cause I do a Zoom option as well, but we're going through the Luther's Catechism.
Yeah.
And we're at the point now where we're at the Lord's Prayer, which we're not going to get to before we break for the summer. We're not going to get through it. I wanted to, but it's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
But we just encountered that first petition of the Lord's Prayer where we talk about our Father.
Yeah.
Right? And we had a really good, long discussion on how our family of origin issues, or what's called FUI.
Right.
Right? Because Scripture gives us this paternal or familial relationship with God, if we were to have a bad example of a fleshly family relationship, like bad mothers or bad fathers or absent parents or whatever it is, does that influence the potential relationship that we have with God, especially if Scripture is trying to connect it back to that imagery?
Yeah.
And the sad reality is it shouldn't, but it totally does.
Yeah.
And like, I had one member of our group said, I never had a father, so calling God our father means nothing to me. I don't know what a father is, you know?
Yeah.
All I had was a mother growing up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's tough. That's really tough. So, you know, especially with these families when they break, you know, our parents often, as a product of a divorce, parents, maybe unintentionally or not, whatever it might be, they use children as weapons in divorce proceedings, especially the nasty ones.
Yeah.
And that's devastating.
Well, and it doesn't even have to go that far. One of the, even in intact families, the largest predictor of if a child will participate in church is it the father. If the father participated.
Yeah.
Because if the father doesn't participate, chances are the kids won't.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is an odd dynamic to me.
Yeah.
Really odd. But that is the correlation there. Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever. I mean, that's the social study.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it holds true. It holds true.
Yeah, absolutely.
It truly does. So it's tough. It's tough. It's really tough. So it is, I think it's almost like an, you know, to go back to what is it, the classic memes from us, like, you know, the classic stories from Gen Xers and us young, older millennials, like when our parents told us the story of going to school, right? We had to go to school uphill both ways. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense how you can go uphill both ways, but that's what it feels like. I feel like the church, capital C, is doing that. We have an uphill in every direction.
Yeah.
When it comes to trying to outreach and bridge the gaps that now exist between us and the unchurched population out there.
Yeah, and no longer can you assume that people have... We're not in Christendom anymore.
No.
You can't assume that people have any knowledge of the church.
Yeah.
And so as much as we've built up this tradition of liturgy and all that... it no longer speaks to a large portion of the population. And when we start using religious speak, it doesn't help, because what we need to do is communicate with people out of love,
mm-hmm.
out of meeting their needs. We really need, if we're going to do outreach, to reach people using the language of the culture.
Yeah. Well, and it's... You know, that holds true on so many levels, because when I, you know, one of the earliest memories that I have from my leadership and worship journey, right, when I started seminary, I had seasoned parishioners at both of our congregations here at All Saints, over at Epiphany, both. When I was beginning my sermonizing journey while in seminary, seasoned believers, they have been in those pews for 20, 30, 40 plus years, coming up to me being like, "Oh, Dave, you're going over my head here.
Yeah.
You're going over my head."
And you're like, "I'm only in the first semester."
Yeah, I'm like, "I just started. What are you talking about?" But that's what I was doing. I was using that language that I was hearing at seminary, which even for seasoned believers, right? And I'm like, man, that is so. If you know, my cradle Christians are struggling understanding what I'm saying, how the heck is somebody who's never darkened the door of a church going to connect with me?
Exactly. Yeah.
So it was a big shock and a big change I had to make really early on.
Well, and I you know, I hate to say it, but some of the studies have shown that the pastors who don't go to seminary are actually more effective than the ones that do.
Yeah.
Which could be why fundamentalism is so rampant.
Well, it's the charismatic movement.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about that. I think I talked about this last week on the podcast. It's building that capital, that social, connectable, relational capital early on.
Right.
And it's just, you know, when you have that captured audience, you got to make it worth their time. Otherwise, you're going to lose them. And if you can't establish yourself within the first 5 minutes, this is what they taught us. And I learned this in communication at UT in my undergrad. So if you're even doing a TED talk or anything, or just public speaking in general, if you can't hook them in under 5 minutes, 5 minutes is like the absolute deadline. It's under five. Most people, it's under a minute. If you can't hook them in 45 seconds, they're not gonna hear you.
Yeah,
they'll hear you, but they're not gonna listen.
Yeah,
and it's you've lost them.
Yeah, and we're kind of getting far afield from this, because what 1 Corinthians is really about is establishing the culture within a community that is authentic and that is welcoming.
Yeah.
So this is the vibe. You know, if you have this love and this trust and all that built up between the members of the community, people will sense that as soon as they come through the door. And so this patience, this kindness, not having people that are arrogant and rude.
Yeah.
You know, it speaks to people as they come in and they sense how the community interacts with each other.
Well, and I think too that we have a natural, you know, inherent detector for authentic love. We can sniff it out.
Yeah.
You can be present and you can figure that out really pretty quick. You're like, oh, okay. Because we've had, you know, I know we brought this up before, but this the community might feel like they're welcoming.
Yeah.
And they are welcoming, but it's a welcoming for the ones that are established, the ones that we know, the ones that are similar. And where it is a genuine love for that, it's not as authentic in this in the biblical sense that we're that Paul's preaching on here, because it's there's a limiting factor. It's a love that's extended to those that, that we already love and that we know love us back.
Yeah. But even this, because sometimes the hardest people to love are the people you live with sometimes. I mean, in this way that Paul's talking about, being patient, suffering all things, enduring all things, you know, after you get to know somebody or after you live with them for a while, it's dealing with all those little things, right? And the same thing happens in churches, I think, that, you know, the different character flaws that we see in other people can be the thing that trips us up.
Well, and they're projections of ourselves, too.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, the problem I see in you is actually a reflection of the problem I have of myself, usually.
Yeah. And so I think sometimes the familiarity is what can trip us up. And what Paul is describing in chapter 13, you know, that maybe I'm not as patient with this person. I'm more patient with that person over there.
Yeah.
Right. And this, he's, when I was a child, I spoke like a child. Well, how many times have you heard adults speak like children?
Yeah.
You know, within a community that knows each other,
yes,
right?
Yes, absolutely.
And absolutely. So we can get to a point where it's like being nose blind.
Yeah.
You know, you go into an atmosphere and at first you smell something, but then after a while you don't smell it.
That's right.
I have a new car freshener, and I smell it when I first go into the car, but it pretty soon it, you know, disappears to my sense. To my brain.
Wait, does that mean my farts are always in the air?
And I just don't smell them anymore? Yeah, you went there.
Oh, no. But yeah, no, there's absolute truth to that. Absolute truth.
And so we become nose blind to the character flaws that are within our community.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes an outsider can come in and sense stuff right away that have become invisible to us.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. Well, it also that fits into that whole groupthink too, right? Because that blindness, just we all in your community, you all want to begin it. The whole design is to move you all in the same direction, and you know, ultimately, you just begin to embody those things.
Well, and some of it, you learn how to ignore certain things, right? And you know, that's the reason I've kind of always, because they tell you, you know, a pastor shouldn't do anything for the first year. I don't agree with that. Because that's when you see stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I've been at Epiphany long enough now that I'm part of the problem. Because
you've been indoctrinated by our community.
Yes, I've become part of the Borg. You know?
Resistance is futile.
After a while, things are invisible to you.
Yeah.
Once you become part of something for a while.
Yeah. There, you know, it's, there was a huge, I don't want to say, there was a bunch of grumbling during my final year of seminary.
Yeah.
With all of my advisors and everything regarding my particular situation, just because they were like, especially when I was getting ready to do my official internship year.
Yeah.
They're like, well, are you going to internship anywhere else too?
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, we have two congregations. Why do I need to? And they're like, well, because of that mantra right there. It's like, well, because you've grown up in that one community.
Right.
And you've been working with that other community. So it's like, you know, trying to get you out there to experience other things. And I'm like, I got no time for that.
Right.
You know?
Well, and again, that's another thing we won't get into that because that's another whole thing. I just don't agree with you have to have a pastor that meets every single community that could possibly come along.
But there's another reason. I think that's another.
We're not multi-tools.
That's
Sorry.
Right. That's right. You know, I can, if I am, it's more of a hammer style multi-tool, right? But it does lend that, it does lend itself to the argument and the push for like ecumenicalism, right?
Yeah.
Ecumenism. You know what I'm trying to
say?
Ecumenism. Thank you. I'm stuttering today. My stutter's kicking in. It's because, again, we do learn a lot about ourselves, and we see a lot of our own foibles through the lens of how other people see us too. So
yeah,
that helps a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But again, it's all of this still boils down to the love piece, because if we're living into this kind of genuine, authentic, altruistic love, then that calls us to put ourselves aside, to even put the whole community aside, right, for the benefit of the neighbor.
Yeah.
And it's what I challenged the worshipers, including myself, because I was honest with them. It's like, you know, can we truly do that? Like, I love all of you, but do I truly love you?
Yeah.
And I got some laughs, but I'm like, I'm serious. I struggle at home with my own family.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, no, if I want to be the best version of myself for them, then I have to put myself first. And I overlook the reality that the love I'm called into is if I live into this kind of love, then that's the opportunity for God to fill up my cup.
Yeah. And the hard part for us to realize is we do almost everything with mixed motives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because oftentimes when we're doing something to make someone else happy, even if it's not something that we want, in the end, we're doing it so that we can be happy.
You know? I can assuredly say there has not been a single day of my life where I have lived it solely for the benefit of others.
Yeah.
I have never done that.
Yeah.
I haven't even come close.
And you know, that's where Luther says even the best of our efforts.
Yeah.
Are filled with that.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes that's the difficulty people have in doing kind of social ministries, mm-hmm. you know, because they're really doing it because it makes them feel good. And
yeah.
The minute it doesn't, they come up against a hard block. You know, somebody's not as grateful as they ought to be, or they see somebody with a car they don't think they should
have.
Whatever it is.
Yeah, like, wait a second.
Yeah.
Hold up, you're getting free food and you drive a Mercedes?
Yeah, right.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm in a jalopy.
Yeah. I hear you.
It's tough. This love thing is not easy.
Yep. So maybe we should leave it just there. It's not easy, but it is what God calls us to be authentic community, which means practicing setting ourselves aside for the sake of the other.
Mm-hmm.
It involves us forgiving, enduring,
mm-hmm.
right? I'm not going to rephrase the whole passage, but read it. I mean, it is the blueprint for what it is to be true Christian community.
Mm-hmm. And a community that is in that spirit of true Christian community, we have to remember that it is an outreaching community. It's not an inward community. It's something that we are called to take out and to share outwards, not just within ourselves.
But let there be no doubt about it. You got to get this right within community before you're even ready to reach out.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you bring somebody into a community that's not practicing this kind of love, they're not going to be there long.
No, because they'll sniff it out.
Yeah.
They'll sniff it out.
Yeah.
Well, hey, we just want to thank you all so much for spending your time today with us here on Faith Talk. We also want to thank our podcast composer, Sam Smithberger, and our technical administrator, Jessica Dennis. Now, you can subscribe to Faith Talk wherever you find your podcasts. Just search for Epiphany Lutheran Church and click subscribe. Join us next week as we continue our sermon series, Those Corinthians. We do hope you enjoyed your time spent with us here together today. And remember, love is difficult, but love is worth it. God loves you. And so do we. Till next time.